and welcome to Write Boom, the podcast where every week we interview writers about their journey to inspire you on your journey. And today's no different. My guest this episode was a financial consultant, a United States Border Patrol agent, and a special agent with the United States Department of Defense. And I haven't really committed any crimes, but I'm kind of concerned. And he just happens to be the author of a book called She Called Him Raymond, A True Story of Love, Loss, Faith, and Healing. He's also written weekly columns and opinion pieces for newspapers, as well as published articles in regional magazines. And as if that wasn't enough, he's also an accomplished public speaker and a fantastic storyteller. Please welcome to the podcast, Ray O'Connor. Ray, thank you so much for being here. How are you this evening?
I am wonderful, Jason. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. If you wouldn't mind, just let the listeners know a little bit about your personal life.
Sure. You mentioned about some of my distant past professional work. My most recent professional role before devoting myself full-time to writing was I was the president and CEO of a bank until about 5 years ago. And it was at that point that a story had come to me. I had an itching to write it and decided to abandon my career as a bank CEO to write She Called Him Raymond. I live just outside of Saratoga Springs in the town of Wilton, New York, and been married for almost 40 years, son and a daughter, grandson and a granddaughter, and the flexibility of leaving the banking business and writing has been a blessing twofold. One is I love to write and tell stories, and the other is it's given me an opportunity to be flexible with my time so I can spend a lot of it with my grandkids and my kids.
Right. And I noticed, too, because I've been stalking you on all the social media, that you are an avid climber.
Yeah, I do a lot of hiking. It's my avocation. And, I've climbed the 46 high peaks in the Adirondacks, the 115 tallest mountains in the Northeast. And a couple of friends and I went off on a jaunt 5 years ago to Tanzania to climb Kilimanjaro.
Oh, wow. Now, that I did not see. that I was surprised about. That's amazing. And I like to get this little background on people because the whole point of the podcast is to kind of give writers who are struggling or beginning like something to kind of hang their hat on to say, oh, this is just a regular person. They're a lot like me. Like they have interests like I have. And so I thought the climbing was a really cool thing, being from the kind of the same area. I was born in Glens Falls and lived in Scroon Lake for most of my life, and now also live in Saratoga. So I just thought the mountain climbing thing was really interesting.
Yeah, I've been up there a time or two.
So the first question I have for you is, how did you get started in writing? Like, what was the first spark for you?
Well, for this particular project, you had mentioned before, Jason, that I did a little bit of writing in the past, a couple of magazine articles, and I had a weekly column in the Saratogian and also the Post Star many years ago, but it was a column devoted to financial matters. And about 12 years ago now, a story fell into my lap that came to me on the occasion of my mother's 80th birthday. Our family had gathered together, and during the course of the day, my mom asked me to help her with something. And we went into her bedroom. She was living on Long Island at the time. And she reached into a dresser drawer, pulled out an old wooden box, and in it was an old envelope and letter. And she handed it to me and asked me to read it to her. And the first thing I noticed was the postmark on the envelope was dated September 6, 1944. And September 6 happened to be my mom's birthday. So she turned 19 on September 6 of 1944. And the return address on the envelope had the name C.R. Stevenson, Lieutenant Air Corps, a name I wasn't familiar with. And the contents of that letter was a love letter that my mother's first husband had written to her the day that he passed away as a B-17 pilot during duty in World War II. And my mom and I didn't talk a whole lot about her past and her first husband. She remarried 9 years after his death to my father. But, and I think it was mostly out of respect for my dad that we didn't talk about it much. But a few years later, my dad passed away, and my mom and I started talking more about her early life growing up in Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan, and her short time with her first husband. His name was Clarence Raymond Stevenson. And the more I learned about her early life and about her relationship with him, the better the story got. And so about 5 years ago, I made the decision to leave my position as president and CEO of the bank in order to write the story. And the first person I told after making that decision was my wife. And the day I got home from the office after reaching that conclusion, we didn't have the usual, honey, how's your day at the office talk. And so Mary said to me, you know, if this is what you want to do, you have your heart set on it, I'm behind you 100%. But I have to ask you one question. Are you having a midlife crisis? And I said, no. I said, I don't think so. I said, but what I had at the time was a sense of urgency. Because anyone who was witness to the accounts of this story that happened back during the Great Depression and World War II, they had to be in their 80s or 90s. And if any of those folks passed away, what stories, letters, photographs would likely be lost forever?
Now, I know a lot of people that have a hard time like motivating themselves to write, but I see that time was really, really the motivator for you because it was running out.
Yeah. And there was no way that with the responsibilities I had at the bank and other personal responsibilities, family and volunteer work I was doing, it would have been impossible for me to do this project. It was a full-time job. It was by far the most difficult thing I've ever done. And you mentioned before, Jason, about, you know, people who might struggle with a project like this, you know, writers who aren't sure if they're going to be able to do it. And no one was less prepared for what this project entailed than I was. And I'll give you an example of that. I spent part of the summer of 2014 at the New York State Summer Writers Institute, which is hosted at Skidmore College. And I always thought, up until that point, that I was a pretty good writer. And then you get to spend time with Pulitzer Prize-winning authors like William Kennedy, Honor Moore, Paul Harding, and you learn real quick what a good writer is. And I wasn't that. But no one got more out of that program that particular summer than I did. And it made all the difference in the world in terms of getting me over some of the humps and obstacles to putting the story together.
When you tell the story, you seem very cool with everything. Like I'm going to leave my job as the CEO of a bank to go write a book. But like at the time, was there any panic involved?
Well, you know, when I really started to understand the demands of working on a project like this, the small odds of making a living out of it, there were definitely days where I said, what the heck did you do? I questioned myself from time to time, but I always brought myself back to the fact that this was a good story. It was a story that needed to be told. And the only person on earth who I think could tell it adequately or properly was me. And I was just going to have to do it.
Right. And kind of push through the fear and the the self-doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a moment during that whole time, you know, you're going back and forth about, you know, what have I done? What can I do? But was there a point when you were like, I can really do this? Like, I could really get this done.
Yeah. You know, even though I had spent that one summer at the New York State Summer Writers Institute. Even after that, there were a few different humps and obstacles that I was really having a tough time getting over. And I thought to myself, who might be able to help me with my problems? And I've always been fond of the work of James Bradley. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with James Bradley is the New York Times and National number one best-selling author of a number of books, including Flags of Our Fathers and Flyboys. His most successful book, and my favorite, is Flags of Our Fathers. It's the story of the men who raised the flag on Iwo Jima in that iconic photograph. And that book was eventually made into a film that was directed by Clint Eastwood. So I thought, gee, James Bradley, there's a guy who could help me with some of my issues. So I set out to find and introduce myself to James Bradley. And how I did that, you know, might be characterized under the laws of the state of New York as stalking, but but I did manage to make his acquaintance, and the man could not have been more generous with his time and with his advice. And there was one particular day where he and I were on a long phone conversation, and I was bugging him about some of the nuances of writing. And he stopped me abruptly, and he said, "Ray, do you have a pen and a piece of paper?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Write this down. H-I-S-T-O-R-Y. And I said, "History?" And James Bradley said, "Yes, Ray, history. His story, Ray. His story, Ray. Just tell the damn story." I had gotten so caught up in the technicalities of writing that I forgot that it's all about telling stories.
And so you know, technique was kind of burdening you and kind of keeping you from telling the story.
Absolutely. And you have to have good technique. You know, there's a methodology or a number of methodologies that work, but you can't remove yourself from the fact that you don't have anything if you don't have a good story to tell. And if you can't tell it, you know, with passion, with emotion, you know, to bring the characters to life, you know, for the readers who aren't familiar with them. And in this particular case, you know, this is a story about two ordinary people who led extraordinary lives during the Great Depression and World War II. And if you can't gather that emotion and that feeling about these characters, you don't have much of a story to tell.
And that's kind of been a theme among a lot of guests, was the passion and not kind of concerning yourself, especially with a first draft, like not concerning yourself with the technique, for lack of a better word that I'm trying to think of, but not burden yourself with the technique and just get the story out onto the paper. And then the second draft is for technique. The first draft is to get the story.
Exactly. You've probably heard this term too, Jason. You know, it's called a vomit draft. You got to get the story out there from beginning to end and then start to massage it into a fashion, you know, that is suitable for printing and publishing.
As far as your actual writing time, like give us a little insight into, you know, how you made that happen. Like, did you cut out like a part of the day to write? Because I know you did a lot of traveling to do your research, because this was a really kind of a different project than somebody sitting down to write a fiction book when they could just, like, you know, write whenever they felt like it. You actually had to go talk to people.
Yeah, when I wasn't traveling and doing outside research, I'm a pretty disciplined guy. So what I had decided to do was to not change my schedule all that much from when I was working at the bank. I was typically, and from the time I started at the bank 30 years ago to when I left 5 years ago, I was usually the first one in the office every day. So I'm early riser, I would get my exercise in and be at the office pretty early. So what I did with this project was the same thing. Got up early, got my exercise in, you know, showered, shaved, changed. I didn't put on a suit. But, you know, I was at at the desk and at the computer, either in my home office or at the library or a little coffee shop called Uncommon Grounds in Saratoga Springs, writing from 7 in the morning, usually until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I found that after 2 o'clock, I lost my edge. But I would put in that solid 7 hours or so every day, when I wasn't off traveling or researching, for the story.
Right. So it was a job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You got to treat it like a job. It's a little bit tougher when no one's cutting you a paycheck every 2 weeks. Look at it that way.
Yeah. And paying your health insurance and all that stuff.
Exactly.
You have to approach it with some seriousness and with some respect in that way. And you're right. It's really difficult when nobody's cutting you a paycheck, but you have to give it as much, if not more importance than an actual, going to work 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no one out there who really cares about what you're writing until it's done. And until you've told a good story. So most of the motivation, if not all the motivation, has to be internal. You've got to get on it and you got to stay on it. One of the terms it drives me crazy, because I no longer work at the bank, is I'll hear somebody say, "I'm retired." And I'm like, geez, don't tell people I'm retired because it sounds like you got nothing to do.
Right, right.
I've filled in more hours of my day with this book, with speaking engagements. There's a screenplay that's in development for the story as well. And I don't know where I ever found the time to go to the office every day.
Speaking of the screenplay, had you thought to, are you having somebody write that, or have you thought to do it yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. The way the screenplay came up was ever since I started doing book signings, public presentations, corporate events, and that sort of thing, telling the story about the book and the story behind the story, about how I quit my job and researched it and wrote it and some of the extraordinary discoveries I made along the way. At almost every presentation, somebody says, that story would make a great movie. So after hearing it about 100 times, I thought to myself, I'm going to start to reach out to some people who know a lot more about film and screenwriting than I do to see if it makes sense. So I am the primary driver behind the screenplay at this point, but I have gotten help from at least a dozen people who have strong backgrounds in screenwriting and in film. Who have been kind enough to devote their time to reading it, editing it, giving me feedback on it. In fact, this particular month, I decided to enroll in a course at Skidmore College. It's called Storytelling for the Screen, being taught by the professor is Nicole Cody, who's a film veteran. And I'm trying to soak up as much knowledge as I can about screenwriting in the film industry. I've had some contacts with, folks out in Hollywood about the story. And my gut tells me that although this process moves at a glacial pace, that at some point the story will get optioned, it'll get produced, and I'm going to have an opportunity to watch it on a big screen someday.
Well, it's funny because it sounds like what's happening to you now is the same thing that happened to you 5 years ago, where I'm going to write this book, I'm going to go take a class, and I'm going to do it. And now it's, I'm going to write this screenplay, I'm going to go take a class on it, and it's just going to be the same result.
Yeah. It's remarkable the number of people that are out there that are willing to help. I found that with the book. I'm finding that with pursuit of the film and the screenplay, because everybody started out where I did. You didn't know anything. You didn't know anybody. And folks that remember that, who have accomplished some level of success, don't hesitate a bit to give the next person a hand up.
Right. And I've actually found that too with the podcast, that everybody I'm asking to be on it, to tell their story and to share their journey with us, is it's a resounding yes. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, you know, like you, for example, you didn't know me from anything. I just walked up to you at the Upstate Independence film meeting, and I, the podcast was an idea at that point, and you didn't even hesitate. Oh, sure, I'll be on it. And I've been finding that with everybody, like everybody wants to help. And we're so surprised when that's the case. And I think it might have something to do, and of course, you know, I'm aging myself a little bit, with the social media that we've all become kind of accustomed to, that we're not actually having real conversations with people, where if we were, we'd probably find that more often, where people are like, sure, I'll help you, or sure, you know, I'll answer whatever questions you need answered. But it's just, I've found that too. You ask, and most of the time somebody's going to say, yeah, sure, I would love to help you.
Yeah, you know, I much prefer having a face-to-face conversation, you know, about these types of things.
Right.
It's definitely a better way to build good, strong relationships. Not that social media doesn't have its place, because one of the key components in the success of any book today is social media.
Right. Especially social media marketing as well.
Exactly. And the same thing with research. You know, I've had people reach out to me on social media, you know, before the book, well, long before the book was even published. You know, I started a Facebook page. I was putting information out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google+, the book website. And I've gotten reactions and contacts from people all over the country. I've gotten photographs of people reading the book in Ireland, Scotland. I got a message from somebody in Switzerland. And without social media, that doesn't happen.
Right. Right. And I mean, that's the great thing. I mean, the internet is a tool like anything else. And having a 7-year-old, I'm trying to teach her that the computers and the internet are tools, and the internet can be the world's biggest library or the world's biggest waste of time.
Exactly.
And it can connect people, or it can completely drive people apart. It just depends on how you want to use it. Now, we talked a lot about, you know, there were a lot of challenges to getting this book put together, and writing this book. But like, as far as the writing, what's your biggest challenge in writing?
Here's the favorite quote, and I can't remember who said it, but it is my favorite quote of all of the quotes I've read about writing. Writing is about putting one word in front of the other. It is that easy, and it's that hard.
Right.
One of the most difficult things for me was, you know, you put out that first draft, second draft. I think I wound up with about 15, 16 drafts of the book.
Wow.
And with every draft of the book, there may be some things you want to add, but there are often things that you have to take out. And in some cases, I took out an entire chapter. And, you know, and I devoted so many hours to picking out those words and crafting those sentences and those paragraphs, only to, you know, chuck out 10 pages. And I found that to be demoralizing.
Right, right. And, you know, there's a lot of quotes on that topic. You know, kill your darlings. I think Stephen King said that. And then Elizabeth Gilbert says, you know, you can't kill your darlings. But I think what Stephen King means is, don't be afraid to do it, because sometimes the work is going to be better for it. And nobody else is going to care about that well-crafted sentence if it doesn't move the story forward or, you know, contribute in a meaningful way. But meanwhile, you know, you've invested the time in it, but I guess it takes a lot of strength to be able to say, okay, I'm just going to cut this chapter right out.
Yeah, the story and the writing is as much about what you leave out as what you put in.
Right, right. Very well said. Now, what advice would you give to writers, whether they're beginners or not, if they've been writing for a while?
A number of different things. You know, first one is don't be intimidated by the process. Everybody starts out in the same place. And it, again, it's back to that phrase, just putting one word in front of another. Have confidence in your story. At different points, I lacked confidence. And I'll share another story with you. You know, one of the two heroes in our story, Raymond Stevenson, the B-17 pilot, he had two younger sisters, both of whom, when I started researching the book, lived in Ohio. His older of two younger sisters, Marjorie, passed away last year. But I went out to visit her in Springfield, Ohio. And on my way there, I was having serious doubts about whether anyone besides me would think this was a good story. I happened to stop into a flower shop because I wanted to bring flowers to Marjorie. And it was just before Valentine's Day. Place is buzzing with activity. And a woman at the counter says, do you need roses for Valentine's Day? And I said, no, what I'd like is a nice bright bouquet of fresh spring flowers. She comes back with a gorgeous bouquet and says, these flowers must be for a special woman. And I said, these flowers are for a 90-year-old woman I've never met. And the woman behind the counter says, there's got to be a story behind that. And I said, there sure is. She said, is it a good story? And I said, how about I let you be the judge? So I started telling her the story about Helen and Raymond and why I was in Springfield, Ohio. And as I told the story, I could see all the workers in the shop, one by one, stop what they were doing. And they were listening too. And so were the customers in the shop. And as I told the story, I could see tears well up in some of their eyes. And when I was done telling the story, the woman at the counter said to me, you know, Raymond, that is not a good story. That's a great story. And that's when I knew. That's when I knew I had to quit my job and write this book. So they're going to be, you know, as long as people go after it, stay after it, do their best work, you know, regardless of whether you sell, you know, 10 copies or 10,000 copies, just tell the story that you think needs to be told. Don't be dissuaded. Don't get discouraged. Because if you keep at it, there are going to be certain moments of magic that happen that will make the process and the agony and the work all worthwhile.
Now, the question I asked you earlier was, you know, when was the moment where you said, I can actually do this? I guess in your case, it's, I have to do this. Like, when was the moment that I have to do this story? And I think that was it.
Yeah, that moment in the flower shop, you know, was really the key moment. And I think an accumulation of other things. You know, I happened to find the only surviving member of the B-17 crew that Raymond was the flight commander and pilot of, who, you know, on a blind phone call from a guy he had never met, knew nothing about, was willing to invite me into his home in Ada, Michigan, to tell me a bunch of exciting, wonderful, heartfelt war stories. And similarly, you know, with family members out in Ohio, people who helped me with research on military records. After a while, this accumulation of contacts, help, small miracles, you know, seemingly just falling out of the sky on me. I thought it was destiny, that this was something that was supposed to happen, regardless of whether I wanted to do it or not.
Right. Right. Something or somebody was guiding you and kind of leading you along the path.
Yeah. You know, there's a quote I came across years ago, but hadn't paid much attention to it until I got into the thick of this project. But German statesman and philosopher Johann Goethe said, whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. And once I made the commitment to tell this story, you know, I'm not so sure about the genius, but the power and the magic, I saw it happen over and over again.
Right. And I'm sure in your mind that that whole process and seeing all that stuff happen was worth more than the book being a huge success right off the bat.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I went into this thing with fairly modest objectives. And those were, I wanted to tell a story that my mom and our family and Raymond Stevenson and his family could be proud of. And almost, gosh, must have been 24 of his family traveled from Ohio to New York for the book launch. I had other people come from Michigan, other areas, you know, in the Midwest, you know, for the 2-night launch event that we had. And once I knew that it was a story that his family and, you know, my mom and our family could be proud of, whatever happened after that, you know, it was immaterial. You know, I wanted to, you know, sell books, but at that point, like I said before, whether I sold, you know, one or a million or anything in between, it became much less important.
Right. And it is a beautiful story. To the listeners out there, if you haven't read it, at least go to the website and take a look at it. It's a great story. And you could have, there was a potential for you to never know this story. You may have never found any of this out.
That is absolutely correct. If my mom had not taken the occasion of her 80th birthday to share that letter with me, and if, you know, 5 years subsequent to that, I didn't decide to leave the bank and research and write it, I would have never known almost the entire story. And there was so much that I learned that even my mother and my mom and Raymond had a daughter together. You know, my sister, Anne Marie, there was so much that, you know, she didn't know, that my mom didn't know, even that Raymond's sisters didn't know, that that was uncovered in the course of researching and writing the story.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And the name of the book again is She Called Him Raymond. And what's the tagline?
A True Story of Love, Loss, Faith, and Healing.
Yep, beautiful. And I was telling Ray, I think before we started recording, that I'm halfway through the book, and I'll probably finish it this weekend because I am a history buff, and the story is just too good to put down. Ray, thank you so much for being with us today. What do you have coming up as far as events and projects? What's going on with you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have a whole bunch of events. I don't have the list of them in front of me, but if any of your listeners want to go to the website, shecalledhimraymond.com, there's an events page on there that they can click on. It'll show events that we have coming up. They can also, from the website, or if they want to go, you know, directly, if they have an interest in purchasing the book, it's in hardcover, softcover. There's an audio book, an ebook also. It's available at the usual spots. You can order it through Amazon. But I will mention that I'm very fond of independent bookstores. We're lucky to have a beautiful independent bookstore, North Shire Books in Saratoga Springs. There's one nearby in Albany and in Schenectady. But there are wonderful independent bookstores all over the country. And if they don't have it in stock, you know, they can order it for you. But especially in this region, many of the stores have it in stock all the time.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that they can actually go to northshire.com and order it right off of there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a friend of the bookstore.
Oh, good for you. And North Shire usually ships next day. They do not charge a fee for delivery. So you basically get the same deal that you would have gotten from Amazon anyway, but you help to support a family-owned local bookstore.
Right, right. And then as far as social media, where can people find you?
Let's see. There is a Facebook page through which I do most of the communication. I use Twitter. I have a very substantial following on LinkedIn, but the Facebook page, She Called Him Raymond, would be the best spot on social media.
Great. And what I'll do is in the show notes on the website, the rightboom.com website, I'll have all of that information listed. Thanks again, Ray. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Jason, thank you very much for inviting me. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And you have to come back and fill us in on your climbing and on your further writing.
I would be happy to.
Thank you all again for joining us on this episode of Right Boom. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page. The username is Right Boom Podcast. Check us out on the web at rightboom.com. And you can and should probably follow me on Twitter at Jason Noxon, JasonNoxon, for Right Boom updates. And we're now on SoundCloud, and the username there is Right Boom. So until next time, what are you doing listening to podcasts? Go write. Hello, dearest friends of the Right Boom podcast. This is your host, Jason Noxon, once more. I just wanted to ask you, do you know where you can find us on the interwebs? Well, I'm going to tell you. You can find us at Apple Podcasts, through the usual methods, you know, iTunes and all that, where you can go and subscribe to the podcast and then leave us a review, if you would, please. And then we're also available for those of you who are not fans of the Apple platform. We've got something for you, too. We're available over on Stitcher. So if you head over to Stitcher.com and find the Right Boom podcast, it's just search for Right Boom, WRITEBOOM, and you'll find us. And the procedure's similar. You click on subscribe, and then you leave a review. Let's go over that again. Go to your platform of choice, click on subscribe, and leave a review. Leave us 4 stars. Who cares? 4 stars is fine. This is 2017. We're not going to get upset over 4 stars. We'd really appreciate it, though. If you could go to your platform of choice, give us a review, and subscribe to the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You're all wonderful.